Hi, everybody. Welcome back to What's Next, the West Wing podcast. It's episode 6.
Hey, you didn't introduce me.
Sorry. Is it episode 6, though?
Hi.
How you doing, buddy? It's Joseph Amato here. Sitting across from me is, what's your name? Oh, Anthony Caputo.
That's it. I'm so proud.
ACN.
ACN.
What episode is this? Six,
this
right?
Is six.
Six. Mr. Wills of Ohio is the title. It's one of those deceptive episodes where I feel like there's a lot going on, but there's stuff that's underneath that I don't think I realized was there until I'm like watching it and kind of thinking about it. It made me think a lot more, I think, than I was anticipating. How did you feel about the episode?
I thought it was good.
Yeah?
I thought it was good. We watched this, full disclosure, we recorded this the first time, and it was so bad that we couldn't responsibly let other people hear us speak the way we did.
Okay, so, wait, I just want to be clear. Are you saying that both of us were bad?
Yes, it's a shared responsibility and okay. A shared endeavor. So
No, I decided, but before we move on from that, specifically, what did you not like about that last recording?
I'm not allowed to get into the specifics.
That's true. That's true. I forbade you from saying those things again. Rest assured, they're not juicy details. It was so mind-numbingly fucking boring and unintelligible. Bottom line is, the thing that I'm trying to get to is that it was on Anthony. Okay, so again, so you did like this second time around.
I did. Okay. I did. Yeah. All right. I was actually impressed watching it again. I didn't realize there was so much packed into one episode.
He does that. He's yeah. Yeah.
But there was.
And it usually seems, I think a lot of times the episodes when they have so many things and it seem like they are either detached from one another or that they're sort of loosely related. Oh, this, you know, the A story is about money in a way and the B story is about money in the way, but they're not really connected. But Sorkin is able to make them connected and it's really fun to watch. And again, when I was watching this one, I was like, oh my God, I can't believe I didn't see some of the things that I, you know, what have you. But I want to start right at the beginning with the poker. Just because I love getting like a group of people together to play poker. Do you do that? Do you do that at all? Or?
We do. Yeah.
Who's we?
I have a good group of my grad school buddies. Oh. We try to get one
grad school.
Grad school buddies.
Ooh, where'd you go to grad school?
I don't want to say.
Really?
Yeah.
What is wrong with you? You never want to say any.
All right, I went to school at Columbia University.
Okay, why was that like such a big deal?
Because I feel like, and I think that we could tie this into this episode, that you get a certain look at people when you tell them where you went to school, or if you tell them, I didn't go to school. So I kind of
One is looking at you. This is a podcast.
Right, but you know what I mean. People are going to be like, oh, all right, well, I look at him differently now.
Oh my God. All right. That's actually fascinating to me. That actually is something that brought Charlie had the thing about, like, you know, that I don't go to school. Do you think they look at me? Do you look at people differently that, okay. So do you look at people differently that A, don't go to school, or B, they say maybe I went to, you know, Carnegie Mellon, Harvard, whatever, insert nice school here. Do you look at them differently if they went to a nice school or a prestigious school?
I mean, my initial reaction is, yeah, of course. I think
In what way?
I just I guess being through it, I know what it is, and I feel like this, whatever school you go to, your mind and your thoughts are shaped by that school and your way of thinking.
But do you wait? So I'm having a difficult time. So you're saying that you hear someone went to Exeter and you're like, oh, that is X type of person. That's what you're saying?
No, but I'm more curious about how that person thinks. So, oh, I went to Exeter. Oh, really? Tell me about
it. So someone then was like, oh, I went to Fairleigh Dickinson University. You'd be like, right. Oh, okay, moving on to the next subject, as opposed to, I want to see what FDU produced with this guy.
No, I mean, I would be genuinely curious, regardless of where a person is.
Okay, so
then
you don't share the same type of prejudice. You're worried. Not prejudice, not the right word. whatever reaction you're afraid to get when you say Columbia University, you do not have that reaction towards others.
No, not at all.
Okay. See, I think the school that you went to is bullshit. Mm. Not you specifically. Not you, Anthony. Right. I mean, I went to NYU and everybody's like, oh, NYU, it's such a hard school and this and that. You know, you that's had a great education. And, you know, there were a number of classes, especially senior year, that I gamed the system to get really good grades and I didn't learn a thing. And, you know, it's like anything else. Like if you have very good teachers, if you want an education, it'll be great. I don't care about what the name of the place is.
And that's exactly why I don't like telling people the name, because other people assume a certain way of person.
Right, but the only reason why we're having this conversation is because you made a thing about where you went to school.
Right.
Had you just said Columbia, I would have moved on. This was, okay, so we weren't going to have this discussion.
No,
this was
not planned
at all. But we've delved into this place because you made a thing about it. Talk about a self-fulfilling prophecy.
No, I'm making a thing about it because I know I'm aware of the way that it's perceived when you talk about it.
Which is fine, and I understand that. But what I'm trying to tell you is the more you make it a thing, the more you help that perception and that issue. Because now we're talking about the perception and issue of going to a school simply because you made it an issue. It wouldn't have been an issue for me and we wouldn't have been talking about it.
Right, but typically when we have discussions with people, they just go over that goes over their
head. Which is fine. All I'm trying to say though is think about that the next time that you don't, maybe you don't want, like if you would just make it not a thing, then maybe it wouldn't have been a thing. I'm just saying, maybe
but I don't think that that's 100% accurate.
I think that's, well, we're talking about it right now and we wouldn't have been otherwise. Okay.
You're the one that made a big deal about it.
Well,
If you would have just been like, pause.
I made a big deal about the fact that you don't share. This is a podcast. They are supposed to hear us speak. It's not going to be like, well, I have an opinion on this, but I'm not going to share it. That's not how this works.
Right.
Like, I went to this school, but I can't tell you where. It's like, you've been doing it since the first episode and I'm sick of it. I'm like going to die right now. You can't tell anybody anything. All right. Anyway, Charlie has an issue with...
Why don't we go back to the poker? Because that's where you started.
That is where I started. Because you had grad buddies. I love playing poker. I love playing poker. I love playing in a group. It's just, it's actually one of my more enjoyable things. And I don't do it enough. And I think that we should do it.
We should
do
it.
With people at work or whatever.
Yeah. So we work at a restaurant. I think we mentioned this in another...
I believe we have.
Episode.
But you know what we should do? We should have, maybe if we get popular enough, we could have like a raffle or whatever. Raffle. I can't believe I just said that. We could have like a lottery where we get like listeners, like 2 or 3 listeners or 4 listeners.
Right.
And we could all meet at a public place because no one's coming to my house. And then we could play poker and talk about the West Wing for an hour and put that up as an episode.
Or we can even get some, listeners would be great. Or we can play a game of poker with
who?
Like someone from the show.
I think I've said this before. Alice and Janney, if I haven't, Alice and Janney and my number one, Richard Schiff, who plays Toby, that's who I, if I'm interviewing or hanging out or playing poker with anyone, it's those two.
Could we invite Rob Lowe?
Yeah, I guess. I don't really have, I know. You're all about Rob Lowe. All right, I was just curious. I mean, yeah. I love playing poker and I love that that's how the episode started. That always seems to be a trope in television shows and in movies, like playing poker.
Or even opening up with poker. I've seen that opening scene many times.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Actually, something funny did happen during the poker scene. I'm realizing just how much, the reason why I love Toby is because I think I am Toby. He knew all, the little things...
The trivia questions.
Yeah, and I feel like that's my role at work.
Hmm.
I know you say, but I know you wish like that was you, but it's not you. Like I have more knowledge than you do.
I don't. Whoa.
Well, I mean,
let's not make assumptions.
I'm just saying, a trivia crack. I smacked you around on that, and then
I'll give you a trivia crack.
And then I am obliterating you on Words with Friends. You have yet to be. I've won what, 6 times now?
Well, you know, I'd rather lose with honor than win with by cheating.
I don't cheat though.
Yeah, no.
That's a patent lie.
And I am beyond the point of even considering that you don't cheat.
That is so ridiculous. Wait a minute. Why is it so implausible?
Are we doing a podcast right
now?
I
don't know. I want to know why it's so implausible that I cannot beat you this handedly.
No, you can.
Oh, I can.
Yeah, but not 6 times in a row. And every time you play a word, you disappear into the back.
Well, because I don't want to do it out in front of. I don't want to have people see me on my. Listen, don't get upset because okay. I'm smarter than you. Just don't.
And don't rub it in my face if you can't win with honor.
But I am winning with honor. Every single time I've won with honor.
I'm not doubting you have a great vocabulary. I'm just saying.
All right. That brings me to the other part of the poker game, which I thought was very interesting. And it's a tough one. I feel bad for Leo. He has to lie to the president when the president says to him, you know, kiss Jenny for me tonight. And, you know, I think he says, you know, like, yeah, no, I will. And he, you know. John Spencer does a great job playing Leo. He doesn't sell it as a lie. If you were watching it and you didn't know any of the backstory, you'd be, oh yeah, he's, you know, it's fine, which makes it more heartbreaking. And it's a great moment. I don't know. Did you pick up on that? I love that moment.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, nice! All right, I guess it didn't affect you.
I'm reflecting right now because I feel for him.
Yeah,
you know.
Have you had to? I mean,
oh my God, that's why
you haven't been divorced, right?
I haven't been divorced. All right,
so you haven't lied or had to be in that position like that, but you've been in a position where someone asked you like a point blank question and you had to just not
tell the truth. Yeah, yeah, I've been in that position many times, and that's why, like, when you bring up the whole scene, I'm just like, yeah. Because that's how I feel.
Yeah. Anything that you want to share? Probably not. Probably happened at Columbia, right? So you can't talk about it?
No. Let me think of something to share. Yeah, you know, obviously. So it revolves around the girl. I was head over heels for this girl, this woman. And we, I bragged so much about her to everyone because I was so proud. And I was so happy to be with her, and everything was going great. And then, out of nowhere, inexplicably, it just ended. It ended so quick that I didn't even know what was happening. So I didn't want to go back to tell everyone that I was so happy to tell that I was with her, that we broke up.
So you were like, you were going around, and you were like, oh my God, this chick's, let's call her Danielle. Her real name's not Danielle, is it?
You can call her Danielle.
Okay, good. So you're like, oh my God, things with Danielle are amazing. Danielle is like, right. She's the best at art. I said art as like a thing that's not something right. That she does. I have no idea. You know, she types better than anyone, whatever it is. And then all of a sudden she's like disappears or... Wait, were you dating her?
We were dating.
Okay. So then she like is like, I don't want to see you anymore kind of a thing.
Yeah.
And it came like out of nowhere.
Out of nowhere.
All right.
And it's not like I would continue talking about her to people, but everyone was like, oh, how's Danielle doing?
Oh.
How's Danielle doing? And you were everyone just like, for
yeah,
months.
Yeah.
And I would just be like, oh, she's great. Yeah. Like I hope she is. Like, yeah. Oh, she's great. I think she's great. But, you know, oh, well, when are we going to meet her? Never. Soon, when there's time.
Right,
you know?
Right.
So I always pushed the question off. Luckily, now people have stopped asking about Danielle.
Yeah, well.
And we can all move on.
I think they all figured it out. Like, I haven't heard him talk about Danielle in like 6 months.
Actually, maybe he's talking about Mary Lou and Beth.
Yeah, you are talking about Beth. He talked about Beth a little too much earlier before we started this podcast. Let me tell you something. It has to do with tantric. Never mind.
Beth is great.
Yeah, Beth is great. Yeah, I've been in that situation before. It's definitely been, you know, revolving around women. I feel like, though, for me, I don't know that there's any one specific thing. I feel like I'm in that position a lot because I'm really good at keeping secrets. When someone wants me to keep something a secret, I'm really good at it. And there have been times where I've been talking about something and maybe not ask point blank. I mean, certainly, like when I was dating this one girl and we were together for like 3 years and then we were no longer and people were like, hey, how is so-and-so doing? It was, you know, oh, she's great. And you know, it's fucking worse than, you know, just dating for a couple of months. Like you've been with her for 3 years. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. You're like, you know, you're talking, maybe this is a girl that you're going to marry, whatever it is. But I always find myself in a very good position to lie. And I don't know why that is. I think maybe because I can justify it. I can justify the idea of, you know, this is good. It is better that I withhold. Because if I give the honest version of things right now, it's just like not the right time. It's not the right moment. It's going to be bad. But either way, I mean, like, I empathize with Leo. I empathize with you. Mm. I feel bad for you, buddy.
Oh, thanks.
I hope Danielle is getting her just desserts for wounding my little bird. Anthony, you're my little bird.
Aw, mama bird.
Yeah. He's like 6 foot. What are you, 6'2"?
6'4".
Are you 6'4"?
Yeah.
You tall drink of water. I didn't realize.
Well, so you brought up the word secret. And I always love that word when people use it. Because
secret?
You know what the root of the word is. I think in Latin.
Seeker?
No, I think it's secrete.
Secrete.
So no matter what, secrets are always going to get out somehow. Because they're meant to be secreted.
That is so dumb. That is so dumb. All right, moving on. So, pivot. That's actually funny. Is the root word secrete?
Yeah.
That's funny that that would be the root word for that.
For secret, yeah.
It's like it's something that you can't keep. Amazingly, I'm actually very good at it. Okay, so the next thing, I don't know if I want to talk about this yet. The budget stuff. I like the little, I think it's brought up in 3 or 4 scenes. I don't remember, but it's Donna asking Josh about the budget surplus and how they've got more money and, you know, all these things. It starts soon after that poker game and, you know, and we didn't talk about the whole, there's a woman that jumped the fence and all this other stuff. And we're going to get into that later. But I guess I'll start this. And then if you want to deviate somewhere else, please. But there's a theme in the episode about, in my opinion, I'm watching it. And there is a general sense that people are not doing their honest to goodness best, or there is a certain level of mistrust, which is not shocking, but it's certainly not a hallmark of a Sorkin show, because Sorkin always likes to, he's talked about it before, when he writes shows, it's about idealized versions of things. So you have the budget thing, and it's explained, and you might think that it's like this cute little story, and it is, you know, whatever, how they get the budget surplus, and why don't you give money back to the people? Oh, it's because they won't spend it right. They'll spend it on goods made from, you know, Japan, and that money doesn't find its way back into the economy of the United States. Great. But there is an inherent distrust of the American consumer there. Mm. You know, the Democratic Party with their money, they don't trust the people. Politics aside, that's an interesting storyline. Now, you compare that to what's going on. Literally, the scene right after that is Josh walking in on the meeting that everybody's having regarding the bill that they need to pass by getting these people to remove an amendment, these three Republicans to remove an amendment. And what's going on there? But they're reading a list of things that Republicans have added on to the bill that are huge wastes of money, clearly. There's things that, you know, was ash and volcanoes, and then Leo was like, by the way, the FAA doesn't know what that is, and they're going to restore Susan B. Anthony's house. Josh makes the joke, the bathroom tile could use some regrouting,
right.
which is an indication of that's what's actually happening. So again, you're seeing this element of people not doing their best mistrust. Were you picking up on any of this?
No, but keep on going.
All right. So I'm just curious because like now all of a sudden watching it again, it's like it's hitting me like right in the face. And then you get to Mr. Willis and the scene where all those people are there. And then you see it from the people even... Okay, so these are abstract things we're talking about, right? Democrats don't trust citizens.
Yeah.
And, you know, there are these faceless, nameless people that are adding amendments that we don't really know anything about that's causing money. Fine. But now you have Toby and Mandy up against these three Republicans, or really two, because Mr. Willis is there for the ride. And the Republicans don't even know what Article 1, Section 2 says.
Mm.
Toby reads it without it being complete, and he's like, yeah, see, it says it right there. And then Toby, you know, does the old little magic trick and is like, that's actually not what it says. So now you're watching these people engaging in a dishonest, disingenuous fight. They don't even have, they're not even taking the full faith and going the extra mile and knowing what they're talking about. Then you turn a little bit later and you have Toby say to them, or say to Mr. Willis, you know, it is partisan. This isn't, I'm not doing it just for the honor of it. It is a partisan thing. And by the way, I was taking advantage of you. So you have all these things going on. And who ends up being the hero of the day? But this citizen, this one man, Mr. Willis of Ohio. And it's not really hammered on. It's not something that's really trumpeted, and something happens later that I think is really super on the nose that really kind of annoyed me. Or not annoyed me, it's just not my taste, and we'll get into that. But you have this entire, up to this point, episode of mistrust and people not being upfront and doing the honorable thing. And all it takes is this one dude to do the right thing. And the look on Toby's face is just amazing. Like, Toby, if you watch the scene again when Mr. Willis says he will, you know, drop the amendment, Toby is, like, locked on Mr. Willis no matter who is talking to him. Like, he just can't believe that this just happened. Mm-hmm. And it was, I don't know, watching it this time, I was just so struck. And it was just so beautiful that, you know, we've been watching for 4 or 5 episodes these people in this White House trying to do good work. And I think it was a little reminder by Sorkin that it's citizens too. It's a social studies teacher that's not as smart of it, as smart as his wife, who could easily be in grief right now because she's dead and listen to everybody that tells him to do this, that, and the other. But he came in with an open mind and his mind was changed. And I just thought it was... It's something that, again, isn't hit over the head. I thought it was beautiful.
Mm.
I don't know. What's your thought about that?
He was the oasis in the desert.
I don't know what that means.
In this pool of mistrust and dishonesty, you have this one person who everyone starts to latch onto. It turns everyone's head because he stood up for what he thought was right and what he was being honest. So my metaphor is he's the oasis in the desert.
I think I like the way I said it, but I get what you're saying now. But so you agree then? You say
absolutely.
It.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I actually like social studies more just because of Mr. Wells of Ohio.
You don't like social studies?
I hated social. That was the only class I failed. I miserably.
Did you really?
Yeah.
What is the capital of Vermont? Really? You don't know it? Montpelier? Montpelier? I don't know how to pronounce it, but at least I know it. New Hampshire?
New Hampshire.
Yeah, what's the capital of New Hampshire? Is it Nashua? I actually don't know.
Why can't you say what's the capital of New York?
What's it? Because we live in New York. Oh.
Okay. What's the capital of Virginia?
Virginia. I don't know.
What's the capital of Maryland?
I don't know.
Aha!
What is it?
I don't know. Isn't it D.C.?
No, D.C. is its own thing.
All
right. So the capital. Is it Baltimore? Is Baltimore the capital?
Baltimore. I know Atlanta's Georgia.
You mean Georgia is Atlanta?
It's just a big city. I don't know. I always get
Tallahassee's Florida, right? Okay. Bottom line is it's not Fort Lauderdale. Now you're just being a jerk. Okay. The bottom line is I thought this was an episode of the little guy standing up. And I don't want to overblow that because it's not really huge, but do you see that anywhere?
Yeah, now that you're saying, I can't pinpoint it in other places in the episode, but yeah, I definitely see that theme coming through. But yeah, the only Maybe the only other point of it was at the end when Charlie kind of ran up to the bar when the president's daughter was getting hit on.
Those three thugs. That's actually a very good point. Yeah.
Because he was, you know, he stood up for her.
No. Yeah, that's actually a really good point. I think that's one more example of, I mean, yeah, you've got, it's certainly not the same surrounding of it. You're not looking at Josh and Sam and CJ as being kind of like bad and what's his name has to rise up.
Right.
Charlie has to rise up to the top. But you're right. I mean, Charlie does. It's a moment for Charlie to stand up and rise.
And you know where else you might be able to see it too is when CJ comes to Sam with her honesty and says, look, I know I've been defending this census thing for the last...
Yeah, because she's been lying about it for what, like 3 weeks?
For 3 weeks. And she broke honesty with Sam and said, hey, look, I really don't know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, yeah.
And she was faking it for three
weeks. Well, then there you go. I mean, that's actually a really good part of it too. It's like the difference between just doing and realizing, oh, hey, you know, I have to be better at this. Now, I don't know if her motives were necessarily altruistic. They may have been a little bit more based on the fact that eventually I want to be found out or I'm going to look like an idiot, so I need to know. But I mean, even there, that furthers everything, because that's even another example of how you have someone who's not doing the right thing. Now, she fessed up, but it just makes me appreciate Mr. Willis. To me, and this is a personal thing with me, I appreciate people that can change their mind. In this day and age, it's very bad to change your mind. They're called flip-floppers in our current political climate, as opposed to, oh, hey, you were introduced to new information and you made a different determination. I mean, I'm certainly not the same person I was 5 years ago or 10 years ago, and I'd be really, I don't know. I don't think I would trust a person that wasn't capable of changing their mind.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I was going to say I respect people that are able to see a good argument and change their perspective. I feel like people are so hard-headed these days, just in everyday life.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I wouldn't trust someone who didn't change their mind.
Oh, you wouldn't trust somebody who didn't change their mind?
Yeah, correct. If you can't change,
okay,
if you don't have...
I'm not as surprised.
Okay.
Okay.
I was like, what? Did I just admit that I killed a guy? I was like, the body's in the closet. No, seriously, like, I don't think if you think you know everything, I mean, right. I joke about how much smarter I am than you, but no, it's a joke because you're a very, very intelligent guy. And I think you and I are both on that same page of thinking, all right, we clearly don't have all the answers and
obviously.
We always need more.
Right.
For people to just sit there and say they know everything,
yeah,
and aren't capable of changing them is just beyond me.
I'm a huge advocate of communication and tolerance and being open to new perspectives and making yours change. I think that's why I love talking to you so much.
Why do you have to make it at the end sound like where it's candlelit right now? That's why I love talking to you so much, Joe.
We should do this with candles next time.
No, we're not doing anything with candles. This is taking a weird turn, but that's my... Look, I've changed a lot. I feel like I've been able to be open to new information, yeah. And I feel like that's a big thing.
Yeah, and even like... This is taking the... This might be derailing the whole conversation, but I think that... I think one of the hardest questions that I've ever gotten from somebody was, where do you see yourself in 5 years? Because I know the person that I am today is going to be radically different than the person
I am. Yeah, that is an interesting question. That's a good point to bring that up.
And I know that I'm going to change within that 5 years. I'm going to change in a year. If you ask me right now, do you want to have kids or do you want to get married? The answer is like, I think so. But if you ask me, do you want to be married in 5 years? I don't know.
Right.
I remember I got that question in a job interview once. They said, where do you see yourself in 5 years? And I said, I was silent for a good 30 seconds. And then I finally came up with the answer. And mind you, I was in a room with three guys that were like really big executives in this company. And right. Very intimidating. And I had to look them in the face and say, sorry, guys, I cannot answer that question honestly. I don't know where I'm going to be in 5 years. And
do they respect you for that or no?
Well, needless to say, I didn't get the job.
Yeah, but you don't know that that's the reason why.
Right. Yeah, I think they did. I think
they were worried that you couldn't beat anyone on Words with Friends.
Yeah.
I think that was their major concern.
Maybe I don't want to work for a whole company that cheats and lies.
Oh.
But I think...
It turns out they don't. But okay, go ahead.
I did get a turn of head from them. They all... I don't think they've ever gotten that response. Or
it's just... It really, I mean, it's... I have never been asked that question in terms of a formal interview. I mean, certain people have asked me, where do you see yourself in 5 years? I think it's a terrible question to ask anyone. I mean, I don't understand how... I mean, are there things about your life that you have become or done that you could not have possibly imagined having happened?
I couldn't fathom my life right now a year ago. And the pace of change that we're all...
Whoa, what do you mean? A year ago? That's really stark. What's so different? Or what happened that's so...
And you've said this to me before, but within the last year, I haven't been more creative or honest in my entire life. And I didn't think that I'd be sitting here doing a podcast with you. I didn't think that I would be where I am in my company right now. Now I'm thinking about packing up and going to Singapore or San Francisco in a year. I'm also have a little startup company. Like a year ago.
So these are positive things you're saying.
Right.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I didn't understand if you were saying that they were bad.
Yeah, things. No. I mean, there are equal share of bad things too. But what I'm saying is a year ago, I couldn't even come up with the thought of these things remotely happening. And now they're all in my life and it's real and it's an everyday thing.
Right.
You know? So yeah, I think that, you know, the pace of change in the world at this point today is so much faster than it was in the past. And I'm not trying to put anyone down in the past. I'm just saying this is what it is. This is reality right now.
Yeah, fuck you people from the Byzantine age.
The Byzantine
age? I don't know. I went for age. I went Byzantine.
How about you baby boomers?
Yeah. Fuck you baby boomers and Byzantines. That's what I got.
Yeah.
All right. That's really cool. So I had no idea that was... I thought we were going to talk about like regular stuff, or I don't want to say even like regular stuff, but like even just like, you know, you were just like, yeah, I never thought that I would, you know, live here, or I never thought... It's funny that there are things that are happening in everyday life seemingly for me, watching you, interacting with you as I do every week, that there are things that are occurring in your life that you could not have fathomed, you know? And that's how incremental that is. And that's, or not incremental, how everyday that is. And that's why, to me, people that, you know, are not capable of growth or change or open to new ideas, I don't know, just boggle my mind.
So wait, as we talk about this, what's one thing in your life that is different now than it was a year ago?
A year ago?
Yeah.
Well, I never thought I'd be doing a podcast and talk. Sort of conversations that I have like this regarding film and television, I usually have with a buddy of mine that I hope to have on this at some point. But we basically say the exact same thing, so it didn't make sense to have him on this. But a friend of mine pointed out to me once, you know, it would be really that they were interested in seeing, like, there was a if you're really super interested, you can email us. But there was a line in this episode that bothered the hell out of me that I thought was lazy writing. Anthony, when I explained it to Anthony, he didn't find it interesting at all. So I'm not going to bore you with it. But those are the things that we would talk about. And a friend of mine was like, I love that kind of stuff because you see those holes in things that I've never seen or don't look to see. So I never thought I'd be doing this. And it was based on somebody else's recommendation to do something. But in a year, I mean, look, sometimes life changes things for you.
Yeah.
So sometimes you have to roll with that. But when I think of that question about how I'm different, I mean, you know, I was always someone that questioned religion and all this other stuff. But I would never go so far as to say, oh, I was an atheist. Now I am very adamant that I call myself. I mean, atheist is it's not a very good word. But
you're agnostic?
I call myself, no. I definitely call myself an atheist. It's just that I think I would have always hedged before because like that word is so scary. And now I'm like, no, that word is fine. Even if it's incomplete. You know, I never thought I would be vegan. Or, I mean, I never thought I would care about animals. I mean, The reason why I'm vegan is because I got a dog. And the reason why I got a dog is because my ex-girlfriend made me get a dog. And I remember I said to her, I'm not feeding that thing. I'm not walking that thing. I'm not cleaning that thing. Fast forward to 9 months later and I have that thing and it's the most important thing in my life. You never know. You just never know. And I've been proved so many times to be wrong. So many times.
Yeah.
That it's just, I want to stop looking like an idiot by saying, oh, that'll never happen. Do I want to have kids? Not really. Will I have them? Probably now that I said that. You know what I mean? So it's like, you never know. And I'm not even going to pretend to know. It's too difficult. I don't know how people do this. It's like work. People have to pretend to be certain about things. It's amazing. I don't know how religious people do it.
I don't know if it's
like
work.
Fucking work.
No.
You have to justify things.
Yeah, for
when,
you.
No. When there are things that are clearly unknowable, religion is unknowable. God is unknowable. We all know that God is not proven. It's all based on faith. So if you have to believe in a religion, there's a lot of work to square circles. I don't know how people do it.
Yeah, but that's just testament about who the person you are. I feel like it's so much easier, like the law of convenience. It's so much easier for people just to accept things that they don't know and not having to question it because they don't want to question themselves or what their own beliefs are. And that for them is convenient and that's easy. For people like myself and like you, we question these things, right? So it's harder to just accept it. So I think that there's a difference. And I think that everyone that just accepts things, it's just because of a convenience. And I don't think they get hung up on it.
I do think it is convenience, but I also think that at times you have to keep up. You know, religion is one thing, but politics is another. I mean, we were having a discussion the other night. It wasn't even a political discussion. It was me and a couple of people at work. I don't want to name names because I don't know if they want their names to be named. But, you know, someone was asking me, like, how do other countries afford healthcare? Like universal healthcare. And I just started explaining how other countries are set up differently. I wasn't talking about whether or not they're right, whether or not they're wrong, what the positives, what the negatives were. This one person was just getting so upset and I couldn't understand until I realized information that she was assuming that I was giving an opinion when I wasn't. I was just relaying information. But because it didn't fit into her box, she had to do the work to make sure that my opinion was only an opinion. Ironically, I didn't have an opinion, so as to make sure that her worldview wasn't changed. That is so tiresome.
Or changed or threatened.
Either way. But the point is, it's like, that's so much more work. Why can't you just look at it clinically, and I don't know if clinically is the right word here, scientifically maybe, and just say, okay, I obviously don't know everything critically. Yeah, that's very good. Again, I wasn't offering an opinion. I really wasn't. I was just saying, this is why Canada can afford to do this, and this is why we can't, because we spend money here and they spend their money there. And why can't you just say, okay, maybe I'm wrong, maybe he's right, but it doesn't have to affect my moment, my life, my night, because it's not the end. I don't know. It blows my mind.
I mean, I'm guilty of that too.
I think we're all guilty of it. And I think this is why, and I realize that this seems like we're not talking about this episode, but we absolutely are. Because this is why I try to be like Mr. Willis of Ohio. I remember when I watched this episode when I was in my early 20s, and I was just like, that is the kind of guy I want to be.
Mm.
It's just, that is it. You come into a situation in which you are open and you are honest and you try to do the best you can.
Do you think Mr. Willis of Ohio came into that discussion thinking that he's going to vote one way and he was convinced?
I think he went in there not knowing and knew that the party wanted him to vote a certain way and was just going along with it. Me personally, I think that's what probably happened. I don't think he was going in there saying sampling is illegal. We have to stop this. It's a moral imperative that we do. Huh, Toby makes an interesting point. I don't think that's what it was. I think it was just, all right, I have to do this because this is what I have to do because my wife is dead. And all of a sudden, you know what? This seems interesting. I don't think I agree with my brethren. I think I agree with this guy who's across the aisle. And Mm-hmm. No, I'm with it. That's what I think happened.
Huh.
I don't know. Do you have an opinion on
that? No opinion. No. Just curious.
I don't know. And then you have someone like CJ who's, you know, have you ever, CJ, who was lying for 3 weeks, have you ever like lied that you knew something for like 3 weeks and then like keep up that pretense?
Yeah. Yeah. I got to think of it. You got an example.
Well, I'm in the film business, so I do it all the time. Are you kidding? I made a web series and you know, we were all responsible for writing a few episodes, and I wrote two, and this one wrote two, and that one wrote two, and we're reading them, and I'm like, yeah, this is good. I can see what you're doing here. No idea. We're like getting into pre-production, and I'm like, oh, yeah, no. Yeah, you're going to need that camera angle there because it totally tells that story. Well, I have no idea what they were doing. Like, there were it happens all the time. It happens all the time. Especially in acting and film. A scene that you have to work on, you have no idea what's going on. You have to fake it. It happens all the time, especially when you're schmoozing. Mm. Oh, are you kidding?
Oh, Jerry? Oh, yeah.
Oh, I know Jerry. Jerry's the best. Yeah, he worked on Dog Day Afternoon. Right. Where he was the EP. Yeah. Oh, the executive producer. Of course he was. You know, it's like, it's ridiculous. I don't know Jerry from Dog Day Afternoon. That was just an example that I made.
Yeah, I think mine are more day-to-day things. I think that I try to appear older than I am because I'm usually surrounded by an older demographic. So they always make these jokes about certain things like, oh, look at this. Do you know what that's from? I'm like, yeah, that's great. Oh, my God.
Did you ever have to go home
and like research it?
But was it ever so extensive? Like something at a job that you had to pull off for like 3 weeks?
Yeah. There was all my examples revolve around women. So there was this one girl that I was at work. And this girl really liked me, and my superiors were like, yeah, she's like Punky Brewster. And I'm like, oh yeah. Well, I was like, why? He was like, oh, she's so spunky. And I'm like, oh yeah, that's funny. And like, we were all laughing. And then like, you know, the joke was that I was dating Punky Brewster for like 5 months. And I had no idea who this person was. I didn't even know. I thought they were just making up a funny name for her.
Wait, quick side note. Do you know what Punky Brewster's real name is?
No.
Swear to God, Soleil Moon Frye. All right, go ahead.
Ooh.
Yeah, go ahead.
That's it. No. And I had to just play this thing while I was dating Punky Brewster.
Yeah, Punky Brewster.
Yeah.
Oh, she's a Brewster.
The best part was like, even my coworker was like, who's Punky Brewster? I'm like, you don't know Punky Brewster?
Oh, that's perfect. Oh, that's perfect. You are such a jerk. I love that.
Yeah,
I've had to do it. All right. So the other thing that I wanted to talk about in terms of this episode was, do you want to bring anything up? Because I do want to move on to this next thing, but I don't know if you have something that you want to bring up necessarily.
No, you can move on.
All right, I thought it was interesting. I think this is the first time. I think the first that we saw was how the Sorkin was treating the government versus the individual citizen and people. But the other thing was, you know, I think when you're famous, let alone politically so, if you're the president of the United States, you fear for your life, you know. I think you understand that there is a threat to those around you. But like everything else, I don't think it really hits home until it actually hits home. And if you think about the progression of the episode, you know, it starts with a fun little poker game. Then there's someone that hopped the fence. Oh, it's a frat boy. Oh, it's not a frat guy. It's a woman. It's a woman who's 40. Oh, well, I can't believe she came after me. Oh, she wasn't coming after me. She was coming after Zoe. She was coming after Zoe and she had a gun. Like, these are all things that ratchet it up. It's very, very good storytelling because it could have very easily been someone coming in and telling him from the opening scene it was a woman with a gun.
Right.
But no, Sorkin builds the tension. And this is another really smart way of doing it by just slowly letting information out. Then you move on to Leo. And Leo tells the president that, you know, divorce and the reason why is because of, you know, he's working this job. And you really see at that point just how I mean, just how hard it must be. And then the president reacts as anyone would. He's powerless, and these people around him are under threat, one physically, the other emotionally in terms of a relationship. And he reacts the way he does. And it culminates in him screaming at Zoe and then him coming back down to earth once he's vented and he apologizes to both. I thought it was a very interesting little arc that the president had to go through in that episode. Did you have any opinion on that?
Yeah, I mean, I see the arc. I think it's great. And I think that's why psychology is so prevalent in our country. But I also saw the president facing pressures. Yeah, like we don't know the pressures the president was facing, but this paternalistic pressure of running a family in a sense. And I feel like the president in this episode, throughout the episode, he was personifying the father of this family. And yeah, the culmination of all these things throughout the episode really came to that point where, you know, yeah, this is, he had a release. And I just think that, yeah, I feel like that he has the valence to take on a lot of the pressure from his staff just because he's trying to play father.
Right.
In this family environment. Yeah, he's the father of his real daughter, but he's also fathering Leo. And he's also the father of, metaphorically.
No, I get it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think he's actually his father.
No, I hope not.
Yeah, and this is, and I think this is where, this is that part I alluded to earlier that was a little too on the nose for me. This is like the difference between a show like Mad Men or a show that's not on network. So network TV is obviously, for those that don't know, CBS, NBC, ABC. You could, I guess, count Fox and, you know, Warner 11, whatever. WB?
WPix 11.
CW, right? That's what it is, CW?
I think it used to be the CW. Wasn't that like a teeny bopper show?
No, that was WB, and oh, now WB. I think it's CW. Oh. I don't know what it is, but network is ABC, NBC, CBS. When you're in a show like that, you have to appeal to a massive audience, so you can't really be that artistic. A show like Mad Men, which is on AMC, or Sopranos, or The Wire, which is on HBO, they can afford to be artistic. And, you know, there's that moment. If this show were on any of those other channels, HBO, AMC, I think the line would have been cut when Leo says, honestly, Mr. President, the president says, I can't believe it's been 3 weeks or 2 weeks since this happened. You didn't tell me. And then Leo says, honestly, Mr. President, I know how you feel, but I thought you would feel guilty about this and turn that guilt in an inappropriate anger towards me. That is exactly what is happening. Right. That is literally on the nose what is happening. And now the audience member, as a piece of art, does not have to do any work in order to suss it out, to look inside themselves, or any of that stuff. And that's the only thing that kind of, taste-wise, if you're curious as to know what my kind of taste is, my taste is that, is to strike that line, because you're now telling me what is happening.
Mm.
I don't need to be told what is happening. I'm witness as to what is happening, and it's much more artistic and poignant to discover that for yourself. It's as if you're looking at a painting, and next to the painting, you're being told about what it's about and what you're supposed to feel. And that's the only thing. That's why I hated that movie Drive, because the soundtrack was telling you, everybody loved the soundtrack and how the music was used,
right?
But it was telling you how to feel in each song. And I was like, don't tell me how to feel. I'm going to figure that out for myself. Because I just charted you the journey of the president. It's not that difficult, I don't think, to figure out, oh, he is feeling powerless. He is feeling guilty that he's put these people in harm's way to do this thing. And when you are powerless and you feel guilty, you act out because you're upset to the point where you need a release. And once you have that release, you can come back down to earth. So that's the only thing that I would change. I don't even think Sorkin would have been allowed to, even if he wanted to, because again, it's a network show and the network needs to be able to appeal to a lot of people. But that's my own thing about that whole.
Hmm.
Yeah.
That's valid.
All right. Just want to know if you care about that at all.
No, I think I respect where you come from with all this because I'm clueless when it comes to
in
this.
Terms of like the art stuff.
Yeah,
yeah. Well,
I mean, I love it. It's interesting, but I really don't have.
Yeah, I
any input. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's just it's one of those. Did you watch Mad Men?
Should I fake this one and just say
no? Did be just be honest?
No.
I'm trying to think of another show that's kind of. Did you watch The Wire?
No.
All right. Well, there are a lot of shows that are pretty on the nose. I mean, I don't think that's, you know, news. But when you watch a show that's not, you can see the difference.
Mm.
I mean, Mad Men is clearly one of those shows. So if you ever have the chance to watch it, or if any of you out there, you know what I'm talking about in terms of Mad Men. I don't know. Before we go, because we don't have too much time left, the only other thing that I want to talk about is the racist stuff. So why don't you bring up something. Let's talk about that.
I did want to bring up one thing.
Shoot.
And it was something before you went on the tangent of, not tangent, but when you started explaining.
I don't tangent.
I beg to differ. That was a tangent right there. But when you brought up, like, you know, we don't deal with the same pressures that the president deals with.
Like, right.
So when you, and then you started going down the rabbit hole of, well, you know, she was there to kill me. No, well, it was a woman. It wasn't a frat boy, then so on and so forth.
Right.
Regardless of if we experience the same pressure as a president, I'm sure that we all have basic emotions that are similar. So I guess my question is to you, if someone was coming after you to kill you, would you be afraid of dying? I don't know where this question is coming from.
But yeah, where the hell did that come from?
I don't know. Are you afraid?
Of course I'd be afraid of dying.
All right, so are you afraid of death or are you afraid of getting killed?
Wait, what? Explain to me the difference.
Well, if someone's actively pursuing your death,
like,
that's scary.
I am, okay, actually, I know the difference. Okay, so yes, I think inevitably I'm afraid of death, but in a different way than I'm afraid of being killed. I'm afraid of both, but in different ways.
Hmm. See, I'm completely different. Why are you afraid?
Wait, why?
I know, but I'm not. I have to say I don't think, because I've never been in this situation, but I don't think I'm afraid of dying.
Really?
Yeah. I think.
Yeah, I'm afraid of dying.
I know that there's a lot of things I still want to do in life, but I'm not so worried if I don't get to do them.
That's why I'm afraid of being killed. That's not why I'm afraid of dying. I'm afraid of dying, I think, because the fear that I have with it is that the good stuff I might never be able to experience again. You know, I'm lucky that I still have my dog, my little boy, my favorite thing on this planet.
Those of you who don't know Joe, it really is his favorite thing on the planet.
He's my favorite thing, but I know that he's going to die if things go the way they're supposed to. He's going to die before me. And I'm not saying that I believe in an afterlife. I'm not saying any of that stuff. But because there's so many questions surrounding death, I'm afraid that I will never be able to, that death will mark the end of being able to recapture that feeling with him. Because he is so special to me.
Do you believe in heaven?
No, I don't believe in God, so no, I don't believe in heaven.
No,
well, I don't mean that, like, after death, I'm afraid that there's not going to be some cumulus clouds that I'm going to be able to sit on and hang out with my dog. That's not what I mean. What I mean is that death is the end of that experience. You will never be able to look in your dog's eyes and feel that warmth and feel that joy that only a dog can provide. Or whatever it is for you, if it's a cat, if it's, you know, your best friend, if it's a slow sip of whiskey, if it's going to a ball game, whatever it is, that's my fear of death. Not you know, the pain although the pain is probably terrible, but
I wonder if there's a correlation between people who are religious and people who fear death.
I think there is. I think that people who are religious do not fear death nearly as much because they are convinced that there is an afterlife.
Hmm.
This is a test for them. I assume that. I don't know that to be true, but I would assume that.
Hmm.
Now you have to.
Do you believe that you have a soul?
I have no way of knowing. I know that there is a thing inside of my body that is separate from the body,
hmm.
But whether or not that is a soul, I don't know.
Do you believe in dualism?
Actually, I don't know that it is separate from the body. I shouldn't even say that. I don't know. I don't know enough.
Do you think that your mind is separate from your brain?
I think consciousness is separate insofar as one does not affect the other necessarily. But that consciousness can be and may be just a happy accident from neurons firing. So it could be literally connected, though in somewhat in a toothless way.
Kind of like your explanation of love.
What? Kind We're of not like... going down the explanation of love.
Damn it. All right.
It's too late and it's 55 minutes.
All right, let's talk about racism.
Racism. Do racists really talk like this? Do they really? Now, full disclosure.
Oh, tell me, Ice Tray.
Ice Cube. Dr. Doolittle Man. I feel like this is an indictment on not just Sorkin, because I don't blame him, but when not a lot of people can do it. Most adults can't write for teenagers or people in their early 20s or you know, kids. Kids are easier because kids are stupid. But well, you know what I mean. They're not, whatever.
Wow.
They say dumb things, I mean. Teenagers have a very unique perspective on the world that only a teenager can have. You can look at the world like a child does and associate that and write that. I feel it's very difficult for adults to write the way teenagers and young adults do.
That's interesting.
And I feel as though this is an maybe I'm wrong and I need feedback on this. Is this how racists speak? Because that's how homophobes speak. Homophobes say faggot. Homophobes say, you know, like fairy poppins or whatever. But they don't go on like a 20-minute rant of all the different quote-unquote gay names that they can come up with.
Every cutscene was a different set of names.
It was unbelievable. It was like, was I supposed to laugh? Because I was laughing. Is that really how racist spit? I mean, the whole Sammy thing, fine. I'm totally fine with it. I'm not fine with it. You know what I mean? That's not fine. You know what I mean, right?
I know what you mean.
All right. But the whole Dr. Doolittle Man and all that, like, I don't think that's how. I went to high school with homophobes. That's how they speak. I went to high school with some people who are moderately racist. That is not how they talk.
No, I know racists.
That's not how they talk, right?
No.
That bothered me so much.
Do you think that this was... No, I'm not going to say it.
Okay. Yeah, all right. I'm not even going to fish because you're so annoying with that bullshit.
All right, I'll say it. Do you think that it was? This is Sorkin's way of alluding that he might have a little racism inside of him?
No, I don't think so. I think this is his way of saying he doesn't know how to write how racists speak. I think that's his issue.
Right.
I think he doesn't know how to write how racists speak, nor does he know how to write how teenagers speak. Because that is not, I mean, they were 100% scuzzy and scummy and sleazy. He nailed that. But other than that,
Have you ever been
ruining the lining of my outfit? Can I talk about that for 1 second?
Oh, the
I'm just going to go off on a tangent here. Ladies and gentlemen. She was wearing jeans, a t-shirt, and a button-down that covered any quote-unquote lining that there would be. And she took out that thing and said, it ruins the lining of my outfit. First of all, I think that's sexist because that's just, there's no outfit to line. It's just a line that, you know, if she said, people would accept and be like, oh yeah, that's something a girl would say. And then the second thing is, it was a cheap, lazy way to get something in. See, so for all the praise I give Sorkin, I do give him shit sometimes.
Mm.
Sorry, I had to get that off my chest. That annoyed the fuck out of me.
Well, she was a teenager.
There's no line to her outfit.
But she probably felt like she needed to take it out because people are looking.
Don't do that. Don't do that.
Imaginary audience.
It was not good. It was not good. I don't know. What were you going to say? You were going to say something before I jumped in, because I had to get that off my chest.
That wasn't important. I was just going to say, were you ever the victim of racism?
I don't think so. It's harder for me to know that because I'm white, which is not to say that it couldn't happen. But I don't think I have. I'm sure I've probably been racist to towards people. In fact, I know I have been. But you know what? I love. Do you know who Malcolm Gladwell is?
Oh yeah.
For those that don't know, read all his books. He is.
He's also full of shit, but he's a great writer. Go on.
Is he full of shit? Yeah. Why is he full of shit?
Every single thing that he's written in every single book has been disputed by this field of psychology, time and time again.
So you,
his stuff is really based on nothing, but he's an amazing writer. Wait, so I'll hold give on. Him that.
So then, wait. So then, you don't believe that one of his arguments, and I feel like this argument is true, is that you are a consumer. Your brain is it's a sponge of everything around you, everything. So if you're predisposed to seeing on the news that the majority of people that commit crime are black people, your brain absorbs that information, even if you don't realize it's absorbing it, and it is crafting a narrative about black people, even if it is not overt, even if you don't like look at a black person when they come into the restaurant and you say, that person's a criminal, even if it's not that overt, but if it's to the point where you say, walking down a street at night and you see someone of color in a distance, maybe it's a group, you cross the street. Now that's technically racist because you are, or it's at least prejudiced because you are you're prejudging these people, okay? What are you basing that information on? Well, all the learned behavior of your life. He suggests that racism is natural. It's not, he's, by the way, half black. He says that he's racist, and it's not necessarily something that is conscious, but is something that at times is simply learned behavior. Do you dispute that?
Yeah, because I feel like our personalities and what we fear and who we are as a person is the right combination of nature and nurture. So I don't think that we're all just a product of our environment. And I think that we're missing the whole half of the argument of the predisposition.
He's not eliminating the whole...
Right, but that's the whole point. People read his books and come to the same assumptions like you just did without considering the other side of that. Well, you're smart enough to consider the other side of that. But I feel like a lot of his stuff, he's such a compelling writer that people don't have the opportunity to think more critically about the issues he's talking about.
Well, but we're talking... So wait, you're saying that nature is not being given its fair due in this?
Yes.
Because I'm talking specifically about nurture. I also believe that nurture plays more of a role than nature does. That said, nature's role is indispensable.
Yeah, I like to think of it like a snowfall. Like this whole nature-nurture argument debate thing. It's supposed to create who the person is. This is your personality, quote unquote. This is nature and nurture coming together creates the person. The person is a product of behavior is a product of the person in their environment. But the person side of the equation has to do with the nature within them coming together at the right point with their environment.
Sure, there's so many. I don't disagree with that. But I guess my point is that I was going to say what this all started with was, I feel like I've been racist in the past, and I don't think it's been something overt. I don't think it's been something where I said to myself, you know, this person is a bad person because they are, you know, of this ethnicity or descent, but rather it was something that I can't explain why I think this or feel this, but it has to have been ingrained in me over the X number of years I've lived in.
I'm not disputing that.
All right.
Yeah.
Have people been racist towards you? I mean, because full disclosure, I'm white, he's white.
Yeah.
I'm Italian, you're...
Italian.
Yeah, but you don't know how to say your last name.
Oh, my goodness.
You don't know how to say it. You say it like a white guy.
No, I say it the way it's supposed to be said.
All right.
It's my last name.
It's wrong.
That's your opinion.
No, that's a fact.
Maybe you're predisposed from all the generations.
Caputo.
It's Caputo.
It's not. Okay. Whatever. So go ahead. Has people been racist towards you, you Dago bastard?
I feel victimized right now.
Have you experienced racism?
No, you haven't. I don't think. I mean, I've seen it. Yo, you know, I have.
You have?
Yes. I went to a 90% black high school.
Okay.
And... yeah, I'll tell you what, it made me a lot more sensitive and empathetic to not be that person and see it firsthand what it feels like. So, I mean, I've definitely been exposed to it. I've definitely been on that side of the coin.
Right.
On positive ways and negative ways.
Yeah.
But, I have. I've never been called Ice Cube.
No.
Or,
Well, you wouldn't. You'd be called,
I think I've been called White Chocolate.
White Chocolate. Well, yeah. But that's pretty ordinary.
Yeah.
It'd be nice if they came up with something like, you know, very... Like, if it would be really great.
What would be some, like, racist?
Something, like, really clever, though. Like, really clever. Like, something that has, like, if they called you Cumulus.
Oh, Cumulus.
Because you're a type of cloud. Stratus.
And but, I would call them Nimbus.
Nimbus. Yeah. Okay. And then you would have been beaten up.
Yeah, probably. But I would have sold answers to test.
No, White Chocolate. Yeah, that one. That's.
I got a good one. What about tofu? Even though it has the whole Asian connotation, but what if someone called you tofu? You're pasty like tofu.
Well, then probably an Asian person would have called you tofu, right?
Yeah, but they were extinct where I went to high school.
They were extinct? Yeah, what does that even mean?
There wasn't anyone there. That was
it was Asian. Just like 90% black people and you.
Yeah.
That's an interesting experience, actually.
Yeah. It was great. I mean, it was horrible, but it was great.
Talk about why was it horrible?
I mean, going through it was tough. But when you look back at it, it's like, wow, I that was a great part of my life. It really was.
Wait, so then what makes it horrible?
You know, going
through
You mean
you got picked on a lot?
Oh, yeah. My first year was rough. But by the end of the high school experience, I learned how to...
It's got to be quite a learning experience, I have to say. I can't even imagine it.
Yeah. Such is life.
Yeah, nicely done. Such is life. What an asshole. All right, I think we, I think we circled the wagon and we went all over this place.
Poor Mr. Willis of Ohio. We beat him to the ground.
No, we didn't. You know what? Mr. Willis of Ohio, if anything, Mr. Willis of Ohio has exalted us. He has for me. I love this episode. I love this character. I love everything that this episode has to say. Even for all the things that fucking annoy me in it, just a wonderful, wonderful character. I loved it. I don't know. State Dinner is next. The next episode. That's such a great episode too. I don't know if it's going to be as good as this one, but this
state. Do they eat in the White House?
Cafeteria? I don't ever think you actually see them eat.
Oh.
They're not in the cafeteria in this next episode.
Still got to find this White House cafeteria.
Yeah, got to find it. What a jerk. All right. So anything else? You got anything else?
That's it.
All right. So this is the end of episode six, which is Mr. Willis of Ohio. Thank you, everybody, for listening. We'll be back with episode 7 very shortly. This is Joseph Amato saying thank you and good night.
Thanks, guys. This is Anthony.
Bye.